Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today we open our show with news about El Cajon Councilman Ben Colasho, who has been ordered to pay attorney fees and sanctions after his countersuit against people suing him was thrown out of court. The judge found that Councilman Colasho's action was a slap suit meant to intimidate people exercising their constitutional rights. Next up, hear about a holiday message by Pope Francis and what the Pope had to say in his Christmas address about the treatment of refugees. On our Capitol Report, learn about a Justice Department decision to revoke an Obama administration order that protected poor people from excessive fines and jail time if they could not afford to pay. Locally, flu deaths are on the rise, and county health officials warn that this could be the worst flu season in years, and we'll have details. Hear about new laws impacting drivers in the new year, as well as many other new laws taking effect, including an increase in minimum wage and more. On People Power, hear about gift giving that brightened the holiday season for homeless children in East County. We'll also have news about the inspiring and compassionate words spoken by the widow of CAL FIRE firefighter Corey Iverson, who lost his life battling the Thomas Fire. Plus, hear about a couple displaced over the holidays by a fire that destroyed their mobile home at a winery in Ramona. On Green Scene, stay tuned to hear about a new hiking app from the county for checking out county trails. Learn about scholarships available for deserving students locally, and find out why incandescent light bulbs around since Edison's era will no longer be available in California. We have some good news to share, including a missing senior citizen found safe on Christmas Eve in Lakeside, and a rescued white tiger cub coming to Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine. Today we'll be re-airing our bookshelf interview with Don Harrison, author of 77 Miles of Jewish Stories, in which he recounts tales found along every exit off of Interstate 8 in San Diego County. Learn where you can take your Christmas tree for recycling in our region and how you can qualify for a free child safety seat if you are a low-income parent. Plus, hear why state health officials are warning about potential health effects of cell phone usage. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. And from all of us to all of you, we wish you a very happy New Year. San Diego Superior Court Judge Timothy Taylor has dismissed a countersuit filed by El Cajon City Councilman Ben Colasho against two beauty pageant contestants and a taco shop owner who are suing Colasho on serious allegations including sexual misconduct, fraud, defamation, and cyber harassment. With Colasho stoically standing beside his attorney, Judge Taylor found that the countersuit filed by Colasho, a public figure, met the definition of a slap suit meant to intimidate individuals' constitutional rights of freedom of speech and petition for the redress of grievances. Slap suits are illegal under California law. The judge affirmed that the plaintiffs have a right to redress their grievances against Colasho in a court of law and to speak about their grievances in the media. Lawsuits are public proceedings, Taylor admonished Colasho's attorney. The lawsuit against Colasho, Jala Tafik versus Miss Middle East Pageant USA, Inc., was filed by former pageant contestants Jala Tafik and Paris Karger, as well as by Dereid Halak, the owner of Tres Taqueria, also known as Three Brothers Taco Shop. Among other serious allegations, the suit filed by attorney Jimmy Davis Parker for the plaintiffs contends that Colasho posted fake nude photos of Tafik on social media to shame her after she was stripped of her crown due to a contract dispute. The suit also alleges that Colasho promised Cargar she would win the crown if she agreed to spend the night in his hotel room, and that Colasho falsified negative poll results to harm the taco shop's business after the owner refused to post Colasho campaign signs on the premises. The plaintiffs contend that Colasho engaged in outrageous conduct with intent to cause extreme emotional distress or with reckless disregard of that prospect and to intentionally interfere with the business. Colasho has denied all of the allegations and has asserted that plaintiffs have not provided direct evidence to tie him to the allegedly falsified nude photos. In his countersuit, Colosio claimed plaintiffs harmed his reputation, caused him emotional distress, sought to interfere with his business relationships, defamed him, and in the case of Tafik, breached a contract, among other claims. The judge granted plaintiffs' motion to strike down Colosio's countersuit in its entirety. A breach of contract clause against Tafik was also defeated via a demurrer process. Documents filed by plaintiff's attorney indicate that the plaintiffs have obtained information from internet providers and social media sites tying Colosio to aliases that were used to post negative statements about the taco shop, such as claiming that patrons got food poisoning there. The attorney for the plaintiffs also asserts that in a deposition, Colosio's wife Jessica confirmed she visited a friend in Cerritos the weekend that the nude photos were posted online from the friend's home. Judge Taylor wrote in his ruling that Colosio and his attorney cannot establish a probability of prevailing on the cross-complaint, adding they offer no evidence of declarations in opposition to meet their burden to establish even minimal merit. In response, Colosio's attorney, Stephen Leosi, said in court that he wasn't able to sufficiently address the points raised by the plaintiffs because of brain injuries he sustained in a car accident several months ago. Judge Taylor then asked Leosi if this was the case, why had he not had another attorney step in his place while he was convalescing? Leosi responded that he had recently moved to San Diego County and didn't know any attorneys who could substitute for him. Judge Taylor ordered Colosio to pay Tafik's attorney legal fees and costs associated with defeating the cross-complaint. The judge also ordered Colosio to pay $1,245 in sanctions. Leosi said that he would appeal the decision. Taylor also granted a motion by the plaintiff's lawyer to compel responses and interrogatories and production of documents. His ruling states that form interrogatories sent in August and September have still not been returned by the defendants, and that Jessica Colosio has not complied with a request to produce 14 categories of documents at her October deposition. No objection to the request for documents was ever received by the court. Also during the proceedings, Matrix Video, owned by Hussam Jezrawi, was called on by the court to turn over all videos shot at Colosio's pageant and given to Colosio. Although he claimed during Friday's proceeding that he no longer had any of the footage archived and that it had been erased, ultimately, Jezrawi did turn over a DVD of the video to Parker. Taylor stated that because Colosio and his attorney failed to file any opposition to the motion, the court is entitled to consider that lack of opposition to be an admission the motion is meritorious. In an emailed statement sent to news media, including East County Magazine, Jimmy Parker, the attorney representing the plaintiff suing Colosio for online misconduct, sexual harassment, and defamation, said that Colosio filed his countersuit in retaliation and, quote, continued his pattern and practice of harassment against my clients. Parker added, in response to his countersuit, my clients filed an anti-slap motion providing the court with overwhelming evidence from Cox Communications, AT&T, Facebook, and Instagram that the posts defaming and harassing my client using pseudonyms, including the publication of falsified nudes of Ms. Jala Tafik, originated from the councilman and or his cohort's residences. The plaintiff's attorney concludes, we are pleased that the judge has seen Councilman Colosio's countersuit for what it was, a frivolous and retaliatory action that has now been put to bed. We will continue to litigate this matter in court in order to bring justice to the victims of the councilman's outrageous and disturbing conduct, Parker concluded. East County Magazine contacted Colosio and his attorney for comments on the judge's decision, but they did not respond. A full court trial in the case is expected to begin in August. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Pope Francis, during his Christmas Mass homily at St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican, drew parallels between biblical refugees Joseph and Mary and the millions of refugees around the world today who are driven from their lands, also under desperate circumstances. The Pope observed that in many cases their departure is filled with hope for the future, while for others, fleeing their homelands is vital for survival. He likened the plight of modern refugees to surviving the Herods of today, who, to impose their power and increase their wealth, see no problem in shedding innocent blood. Pope Francis urged compassion and a welcoming attitude toward refugees, a sharp contrast to the harsh policies imposed by the Trump administration, which has sought to restrict admission of refugees to the U.S. and increase deportations, tearing many families apart. In his homily, the Pope called the birth of Jesus a source of hope, speaking to a large audience of pilgrims from around the world, as well as millions more watching online. The Pope gave a pointed message to those who have denigrated immigrants and refugees. The faith we proclaim tonight, he said, makes us see God present in all those situations where we think he is absent. He is present in the unwelcomed visitor, often unrecognizable, who walks through our cities and our neighborhoods, who travel on our buses and knocks on our doors. He urged people not to fear helping strangers, stating, "Christmas is a time for turning the power of fear into the power of charity," adding pointedly, "a charity that does not grow accustomed to injustice." The Pope closed his Christmas night homily by imploring all Christians to not be indifferent to the suffering of others, but instead to see Christ in all those who arrive in our cities, in our histories, in our lives. In a later Christmas Day address, Pope Francis also prayed for peace in the Holy Land and around the world. He urged people to see the face of Jesus in all children, from war-torn Syria, Palestine, and Israel, to children suffering starvation and disease in Yemen, in immigrant and refugee children, and in children of unemployed people struggling to provide for their families. Alluding to the circumstances that led Mary to give birth to Jesus in a manger, according to the Christian faith, the Pope concluded, "May our hearts not be closed as they were in the homes of Bethlehem," and he urged the faithful to commit to making our world more human and more worthy for the children of today and of the future. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Capitol Report. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has rescinded an Obama administration guideline that advised local courts against imposing excessive fines and fees on poor people. The Obama administration issued that guideline in response to findings after the shooting of Michael Brown by a police officer in Ferguson, Missouri. Federal investigators looking into charges of racism and civil rights violations in Ferguson discovered that the city had a system that trapped poor people into a cycle of rising fines and fees for even minor infractions, jailing poor people repeatedly when they could not afford to pay off such debts. Peter Edelman, faculty director of Georgetown Law School's Center on Poverty and Inequality, is the author of a book titled "Not a Crime to Be Poor: The Criminalization of Poverty in America." In an interview on National Public Radio, Edelman called Attorney General Sessions' action a terrible decision that he predicts will hurt millions of people across the nation. What happened in Ferguson was also found to be happening in many other U.S. cities, with local jurisdictions incarcerating poor people who couldn't afford to pay fines that added up over time. Even a small infraction, such as not mowing a lawn, could add up to owing the local government $1,000 or more. A common problem is taking away driver's licenses when people can't afford to pay for certain fees, such as vehicle registration. That leaves people with no legal way to drive to work, take their children to school, or give family members rides to the doctor. If caught driving on a suspended license, residents could be arrested and jailed, with fines growing so high that they could never escape that cycle of debt. In some cities, judges, prosecutors, and even public defenders are paid with funds raised from such systems, creating what Edelman calls a built-in conflict of interest. The Obama administration, in its 2016 letter sent to court officials across the nation, urged courts to consider alternatives to jailing poor people who can't pay fines or fees to assure that the justice system operated fairly and respected the constitutional rights of the poor. In rolling back that action, along with others, Sessions said he was ending the long-standing abuse of issuing rules by simply publishing a letter on a webpage. He did not give a specific reason for eliminating the guideline against excessive fines for poor defendants. His action was based on recommendations of a Justice Department task force authorized through an executive order issued by President Donald Trump. Lauren Brooke Eisen, senior counsel at the Brennan Center for Justice, denounced the decision by Sessions, CNN reports. Eisen calls the system of jailing poor people who can't possibly pay off huge fines a perverse, profit-based framework that helps spin the revolving door of the criminal justice system, a cycle that isn't likely to be broken anytime soon in the wake of the Trump administration's action. That decision is part of a pattern of actions by the Trump administration that have been punitive towards the poorest Americans, such as failing to provide funding for children's health care and pursuing cuts to Medicare and Social Security, even as the president's newly signed tax plan delivers huge tax cuts for the wealthiest people in the nation.
This is John Pastier with a health report. The flu is here, and it's hitting San Diegans hard. So far, 10 people have died locally of the flu this season, and more than 3,000 cases have been reported. The rate of new cases is also climbing fast. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, says the number of flu cases that are being reported is very worrisome, adding, "We urge the public to get vaccinated against the flu. Vaccination is especially important for people who are at high risk of developing serious complications from influenza. They include people with chronic medical conditions such as asthma, diabetes, and lung disease, even if symptoms are under control, pregnant women, people 65 years and older, and people who live with or care for others who are at higher risk. In addition to getting vaccinated, people should also do the following to avoid getting sick. Wash hands thoroughly and often. Use hand sanitizers. Stay away from sick people. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean commonly touched surfaces. And if you are sick, stay home and avoid contact with others. The flu vaccine is available at doctor's offices and retail pharmacies. If you don't have medical insurance, you can go to a county public health center to get vaccinated. For a list of locations, visit www.sdiz.org or call 211.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
With the new year just around the corner, the California Department of Motor Vehicles, or DMV, wants to inform the public of new laws affecting motorists. Effective January 1st, you can't smoke pot or consume marijuana products while driving or riding as a passenger in a vehicle under Senate Bill 65. If you're a low-income vehicle owner, Assembly Bill 503 creates a process for you to repay parking fines and penalties before they are reported to the DMV. You will be able to renew your driver's license and file for planned non-operation status of your vehicle until the fees are paid off, avoiding repossession of a vehicle for unpaid registration. Drivers for ride-sharing services such as Uber or Lyft must not have a blood alcohol level of 0.04 or higher when transporting passengers for hire in their personal vehicles under Assembly Bill 2687. This measure drops the legal blood alcohol rate to half the 0.08 legal limit required for all other drivers. A conviction under this new law will result in the DMV suspending your license and you will be disqualified from holding a commercial driver's license. Passengers on buses equipped with seatbelts must wear those seatbelts starting in July under Senate Bill 20. This new law also requires parents, legal guardians, and chartering parties to assure that children ages 8 to 16 are wearing seatbelts or face fines. Certain low-emission vehicles will be able to access high-occupancy vehicle lane and toll lanes in the near future under Assembly Bill 544, which rolls out in 2019. Starting January 1st, Senate Bill 1 requires the DMV to collect a transportation improvement fee ranging from $25 to $175 when you register your vehicle or renew your registration. The rate is based on your vehicle's value. For instance, vehicles worth less than $5,000 would pay $25, while owners of vehicles valued at over $60,000 would pay $175, with several levels in between. The funds will be used for building and repairing California's roads and expanding mass transit. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
Hundreds of new laws take effect in California in the new year. Here are some of the most important, including a minimum wage increase, legal marijuana sales, and new rules that affect employers, contractors, job applicants, new parents, and gun owners. Effective January 1st, 2018, California's minimum wage rises to $11 an hour for companies with 26 or more employees, up a full dollar from the old rate. For companies that employ 25 or fewer workers, the new minimum wage is $10.50 an hour. Employers can no longer ask a job applicant about his or her past salary effective January 1st under Assembly Bill 168. Backers of the bill hope it will help close the gap in pay between women and men, since companies will no longer be able to base your salary at a new job on what you earned in the past. Assembly Bill 1701 will hold general contractors liable for wages if a subcontractor fails to pay workers on private contracts starting January or later. Public projects are excluded. Starting January 1st, all ammunition purchases in California must be made in person through a vendor licensed by the Department of Justice. The law also applies to transfers of ammunition. It will also be illegal to import ammunition from outside the state, except for licensed vendors in California. The first legal sales of recreational marijuana will begin January 1st, but only in jurisdictions that have authorized such sales. Californians aged 21 and over can buy up to 1 ounce of marijuana, or just over a quarter of an ounce of concentrates. Sales are only allowed through businesses registered with the state. Locally, the city of San Diego has authorized recreational sales of marijuana, but the county and most other local cities have not. Companies with 50 employees or more must expand their sexual harassment training program to include training on harassment based on gender identification, gender expression, and sexual orientation under Senate Bill 396. A parent with a new baby can take up to 12 weeks of parental leave if they have worked for over a year for an employer with over 20 employees. Under Senate Bill 63, the worker won't lose their job and can use any combination of vacation time or other paid time off to spend time with their new child. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Pistier.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Meridian Broaddus with the People Power Report. Over 150 homeless children at the East County Transitional Living Center in El Cajon received gifts of clothing, athletic shoes, and a good dose of Christmas joy at the 5th annual Christmas party last Saturday in the center's community hall. Gifts were provided by the Church of the Nativity Catholic Parish, located in Rancho Santa Fe, as a part of their Giving Tree, where parishioners purchase a personal gift for each child. San Miguel Fire District firefighters were on hand to give each homeless child a gift and a warm smile, as well as playing a guitar and singing Christmas songs. The program also included storytelling and refreshments. Over 150 children are living at East County Transitional Living Center as their parents are transforming from homelessness into becoming self-sufficient citizens.
The widow of fallen firefighter Corey Iverson paid an emotional tribute and offered words of comfort to his colleagues at Cal Fire during a memorial service attended by more than 1,800 mourners at the Rock Church in Liberty Station last week. The service was also live-streamed for the public to view. Iverson was killed on December 14th battling the Thomas Fire in Ventura County, which is now the largest fire in California history. He was stationed at Cal Fire's Dulzura Station and lived in Escondido with his wife, Ashley, and their 2-year-old daughter. Ashley is expecting the couple's second child in the spring. Ashley Iverson recalled her husband as a superhero and said to the strike team members who worked with him to save the town of Fillmore from the flames, "You were there for a reason," adding, "Today I am asking you to have the strength and courage Corey has." She assured his fellow Cal Fire fighters, "You will survive and use this nightmare to help others." Governor Jerry Brown also attended the service and met with the family privately beforehand after ordering flags flown at half-mast at the state capitals in Iverson's honor. A procession to bring Iverson's body home was met by firefighters saluting on every freeway overpass from Ventura to San Diego, with members of the public also lining the route to pay their respects. Chief Tony Meacham, head of CAL FIRE's San Diego unit, assured Iverson's widow that all of the firefighters in the room at the memorial service would be there for her. To date, a GoFundMe page to help Iverson's family has raised over $500,000, and additional funds were collected in a boot drive by firefighters held locally last week. Chief Meacham concluded, "If you were going to clone a firefighter, you would clone Corey Iverson. Let there be no doubt to anybody in this room that Corey Iverson died a hero. Corey Iverson lost his life for one very simple reason. He put others first." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
A fire on December 22nd destroyed a mobile home rented by Fidel and Dora Ontiveros at the Lenora Winery in Ramona. Winery owner Eric Metz told us that the couple lost everything, including belongings in the mobile home as well as their pickup truck and contents of a storage shed that also burned. Metz said they were not injured, fortunately, but they escaped with just their lives. The couple had no insurance, so the loss is total. Cause of the fire is under investigation, but Metz attributes it to a propane tank explosion outside the mobile home. Firefighters from Ramona Fire Department, CAL FIRE, Barona Fire, and the U.S. Forest Service responded and reportedly extinguished the blaze about a half hour after it began. A family member has said that the displaced couple is staying temporarily with their daughter during the holiday season while trying to assess how to rebuild their lives. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Green Scene Report. If you're looking to get outdoors and get in shape after the holidays, or you just want to be inspired by nature, here's some good news for you. San Diego County Parks and Recreation Department has launched a new Trails app that makes it easy to get information on hiking, biking, and riding paths in our parks and preserves. Easy to Hike is a free app that allows users to locate and view trailheads, park maps, and points of interest in Southern California and beyond. Easy to Hike shares recommended routes near you, including park names and addresses, photos, and in some cases, videos, as well as descriptions to help you prepare for the trail experience. Maps can also be downloaded for access offline. Jessica Geisler, Marketing and Public Outreach Manager for County Parks, says they're building virtual connections between park users and staff, including notifications of timely information, such as buzzing users if you reach an area that's closed for safety or restoration reasons. Geisler says, "It's all part of creating that balance between recreation and ongoing efforts to sustain the natural environment." County Parks went live with trails at these 16 properties so far: Agua Caliente County Park, Dos Picos County Park, El Monte County Park, Gooden Ranch Sycamore Canyon County Preserve, Guajome Regional Park, Hellhole Canyon County Preserve, Lake Morena County Park, Seltzer County Park, San Dieguito County Park, San Alijo Lagoon Ecological Reserve, Santa Isabel East and West County Preserves, Sweetwater Summit Regional Park, Tijuana River Valley Regional Park, Vulcan Mountain Wilderness Preserve, and Wilderness Gardens County Preserve. Additional parks will be added in the coming months. App creators will also be launching new benefits, like the ability to send instant messages to park staff, and opportunities to learn about upcoming activities and events. You can download Easy to Hike from your mobile device today to start exploring in the new year.
This is Krajai Broadus with an education report. If you're seeking a college education, here's some good news for you. The San Diego Foundation wants students to know that hundreds of scholarships are available for San Diego students to pursue their dreams of higher education. Using one online application, students can access more than 100 types of scholarships for the 2018-2019 academic year, with awards generally ranging from $1,000 to $5,000. Awards are granted to four-year universities, two-year colleges, graduate or trade vocational schools. The Common Scholarship application is available online now until February 1st, 2018 at 2 o'clock p.m. The San Diego Foundation Community Scholarship Program is the largest in the region outside the university system. It provides a variety of scholarships to high school students, current college students, graduate students, and adult reentry students. Since 1997, the program has awarded more than $28.7 million to thousands of students. The Common Scholarship application can be accessed at sdfoundation.org/scholarship application. For more information about the scholarship process, you can contact scholarships at sdfoundation.org.
Incandescent light bulbs have been around since Thomas Edison's era, but starting January 1st, it will be illegal to manufacture them in California. Our state will be the first in the nation to phase out the incandescent bulbs under new energy-saving standards set to take effect nationally in 2 years, standards put in place by President George W. Bush's administration. Store owners locally will be allowed to sell their remaining inventory, but after that, California consumers will need to choose from other options, such as compact fluorescent lights or light-emitting diode bulbs. These bulbs must produce 3 times more brightness per watt than the older incandescent bulbs produced. Advocates of these alternatives also point out that LEDs can last for decades, so you'll rarely need to change a light bulb. Opponents of the new requirement note that the new bulbs are more expensive. Though costs have fallen dramatically and over the long term, the new bulbs are actually more cost-efficient. A downside of compact fluorescent bulbs is that they contain mercury, creating a hazardous waste cleanup problem if broken. LEDs do not contain mercury, so they provide a cleaner alternative. Others object to losing the soft, warm glow that incandescent bulbs provided, and some consumers have indicated that brighter lighting can be hard on sensitive eyes. Noah Horowitz, a senior scientist with the Natural Resources Defense Council, believes the benefits of a mass changeover in lighting is well worth the investment and inconvenience. California News Service reports that Horowitz advises people to remember that when you flick the switch and turn your lights on, that electricity comes from somewhere, and often it's from power plants that are operated by fossil fuel, and burning fossil fuels is what causes climate change. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A missing 89-year-old man who disappeared from his home on Shalimar Drive in Lakeside on Christmas Eve was found safely a few hours later. William Taylor, known as Frank, suffers from dementia and left without a jacket. After the sheriff issued a silver alert, an alert resident spotted Taylor outside a local convenience store and notified authorities. The sheriff's department issued a news release thanking the public for their help in finding Mr. Taylor, who was reunited with his family just in time for Christmas. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fisteer.
A white tiger cub will soon be coming to lions, tigers, and bears in Alpine. According to Bobby Brink, founder of the Exotic Animal Rescue Sanctuary, the 5-month-old cub was separated from her mother at an early age and suffered severe neglect under a private owner in Louisiana. After traveling to Louisiana to rescue the young cub, Bring reports, despite her dire condition when first rescued, she has improved dramatically with proper veterinary care. Brink and her rescue team also traveled to several other southern states to rescue 5 bears from inhumane conditions. The bears were transported to the Wild Animal Sanctuary in Colorado, where they will enjoy open space to roam, in some cases for the first time in their lives. Brink is asking the public for suggestions on what to name the white tiger cub, who will soon become a permanent resident at Lions, Tigers, and Bears locally. To learn more or support the nonprofit Exotic Animal Sanctuary in Alpine, you can visit lionstigersandbears.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is the time of year when we appreciate the family and friends who make our lives better. We count our great moments and want to give back. KNSJ has been here for you all year with programming you've come to depend on. We've informed and entertained you. Our programming makes your life better. On December 29th and 30th, we will all come together for Give Big to My Station to support KNSJ. This is a nationwide giving day that supports KNSJ while helping raise awareness about community radio and its role in our culture and democracy. If you want to learn more, just visit mystation.givebig.org to see how it works. You can schedule a donation now by looking up KNSJ in the search box to get to our station page, or tune in on December 29th and 30th as we do our part for Give Big to My Station. When you donate to KNSJ through Give Big to My Station, your donation comes straight here to KNSJ to support the work we do all year round. That's mystation.givebig.org, and we hope you will join us on December 29th and 30th as we celebrate community radio and raise funds for KNSJ.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Donald H. Harrison, author of the new book, 77 Miles of Jewish Stories. This book, as the title suggests, takes the reader along on a 77-mile journey through I-8 to visit Jews at work as well as different Jewish institutions. My guest has also written three previous books, Schlepping Through the American West, Waxy, an American Family Business Success Story, and a biography of Louis Rose, San Diego's first Jewish settler. Wow, that's quite a mouthful. Welcome, Don. It's great having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you, Raina.
Let's start with your new book. In it, you introduce your reader to all kinds of Jewish workers, doctors, lawyers, and alpaca farmer and football players. Give us a behind-the-scenes look at this travelogue. What was it like to encounter such diversity?
Well, Raina, being, Jewish all my life, I expected the diversity, but what I didn't know was what there would be on the next freeway exit. The concept behind the book was get on the freeway, get off at every exit, find a Jewish story. Some were easy because there were Jewish institutions, but other ones were you had to go searching for it. You had to go reconnoiter first and finally find a suggestion of a possibility and then find the story. But the reason that I did this is because I sense that there's a nexus between a location, a place, and a story. I'll give you an example. Let's imagine I was going to give you a lecture on the War of 1812. Mm-hmm. And, you'd fall asleep in about 5 minutes into it. But if I were to give you that same lecture, and let's say we were in the harbor in Baltimore looking at Fort McHenry, perhaps from the same vantage point that Francis Scott Key had just before he wrote The Star-Spangled Banner, suddenly you and other listeners might be much more interested. So I have always gravitated towards finding stories that have places prominently within them. For me, this developed over some years. I had been serving as the press secretary to the acting mayor of San Diego, Bill Cleeter, when Queen Elizabeth II came to visit San Diego. And we had to put together for the visiting press, there was over 700 of them, a little guide to all the different places that Her Majesty would be visiting. There were something like 18 venues that she visited. And those descriptions of those places, which were pulled together from the institutions themselves, found their way into many of those stories. Another time I had a public relations agency and we helped to start the Old Town Trolley Tours of San Diego. And that is very much site specific. You write a script and it has to be the trolley conductor needs to be there and speaking about it the moment the trolley is passing a particular site. And so I found that people are really interested in what they're seeing if someone could tell them about it as they see it. There have been other instances, but that's what led me to the idea of site-specific journalism.
It's like you specialize in living history and finding it and creating it.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement.
When you got off at the exit, sometimes you would start with an institution, but how did you find people?
Well, I'm a member of a synagogue in the East County, Tiferet Israel Synagogue. And so a lot of our members live out that way. And I would say, well, do you know anybody that's lives off of exit 34 or 35 or, and so forth? And people did. So I would get some suggestions. Other times, as I mentioned, you just get off the freeway on your own and you start driving around, you start noting what's there. And then you go back to your internet and you start researching these various places and see if there's something that connects.
So a combination of the internet and schmoozing.
Yeah, schmoozing.
Well, which interview stands out the most in your mind that's in this book? Or is there one that you found most surprising or entertaining or fascinating for some reason?
Yeah, I would use the term fascinating because there are several interviews that really got into the interrelationships between Jews and other ethnic groups or religious groups.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the kinds of stories that I really find very interesting. So there are stories about Jews and Roman Catholics, there are Jews and Chaldean Catholics, Jews and African Americans, Jews and Native Americans, and so forth, lots of different groups. And as I got to write those stories, I got to learn not only about my own culture, but about theirs.
So can you identify one interview? Does one stand out in your mind?
I do have one that maybe I'll even have the chance to read on this show about Native Americans, which I think shows some interesting parallels between the Native American experience and the Jewish experience.
Yes, let's do that. Let's have you read an excerpt from your book.
All right. It is for anyone that's interested. I'm talking about Exit 33, the Viejas Indian Reservation. There was a dinner sometime before, actually was off the reservation, but it dealt with people who live there, particularly the head of the Viejas band, and that's Anthony Pico. And Anthony Pico had been honored by the American Jewish Committee for all of the things that he had done. And I'm going to read from his response. He surprised them. He kind of turned the tables. Whereas they wanted to honor him, he decided to honor the Jewish community. And he said, you know, we've both faced extermination and survived a Holocaust. Indians were not sent to gas chambers. Our prisoners of war camps came with blankets infected with disease that were more lethal than even bullets. In their zeal and greed to reach their manifest destiny, the strangers took our land and took pride in the slogan that the only good Indian is a dead Indian. In California, it was legal to shoot an Indian on sight, to purchase homeless Indians in auctions for slave labor, and steal Indian children from their parents to, quote, save, unquote, them from their primitive ways. Our religious ceremonies were banned as satanical, and many have been lost from our memory as a result. Pico went on to say that as a Native American, he can, quote, sympathize with the ferocious love and militancy Jews bring to protecting Israel. We know the value of having a homeland, a place where you are free to exercise your own destiny and be a family. How Jews have managed to survive as a people amidst strangers and strange lands without a land for so many centuries is an absolute miracle as far as I'm concerned. He said, our reservations aren't as grand as our original lands, but they represent the continuation, security, and future to us. Native Americans, like Jews, will always rise to fight when our homelands are threatened. Tonight it seems appropriate for me to return the honor and pay tribute to the gifts that the Jewish community shares with all the world, the Viejas chairman said. One of the most important is showing how our people, struggling to be free, can preserve our humanity when the world chooses to treat us inhumanely. Jews have always been the first to speak out against injustice and inhumane practices in the United States. I know the greatness in your heart and spirit comes from the terrors of the past. I also know from experience that it is not an easy thing to do to maintain tolerance and empathy for others when your own life is at stake. Living defensively takes a toll on the human spirit.
Wow. That's really beautiful.
Yeah, he really had an impact on the crowd. There were many tears in the audience's mm-hmm. eyes as they recognized the similarity. And I think that's for us as writers, authors, journalists, being able to point those similarities out to show the connection that we have, even though we seem to come from so many different places. It's one of the important things that we can do.
Right. We don't automatically think of Native Americans having so much in common with Jewish people.
Well, you know, of course, we refer to ourselves as a tribe, too. You
know? Right. Right. Well, I know that you're also a journalist. Since 1962, you've been a journalist, right? And working for the UCLA Daily Bruin, the Los Angeles Times, and the San Diego Union. And since 1986, you've written your Jewish stories not only about San Diego, but about the rest of the world. So how does your day job figure into what you're doing as an author? You're a publisher and editor of the San Diego Jewish World. Does that influence you and inspire you to write your books, or how is it connected?
Well, it's very much connected in that every day I'm covering the Jewish world, and so every day I'm running into stories that I can retell at a later time. I had a cousin, his name was Richard Yaffe, and Dick was a very well-known Jewish journalist on the East Coast. He was the UN correspondent for the Jewish Chronicle of London, and he wrote for the Jewish Week of New York, and he was very, very well-known. And one time he was sitting in my living room, and I said, gee, the Jewish world, isn't that too narrow a subject for you? I mean, don't you feel that it's awful limiting? And kindly, but nevertheless, he laughed at me, and he said, limiting? He says, it's all I can do to even possibly keep up, because Jewish journalism is very much like local or regional journalism. The concept is to find a story that relates to your people, and whether it be your people in your region, like in the East County, mm-hmm. or whether it be your people who are ethnically or religiously of your group, and then to show how they relate to the larger stories that we cover. And so I find myself covering very, very large stories all the time, but looking specifically for the Jewish angle in those stories.
So it's sharing stories too, communication between the groups, the small group and the larger group.
Yeah, very definitely so.
In your last book, Schlepping Through the American West, love that title, you and your grandson went on an odyssey from San Diego to Alberta, Canada. So how does this 77-mile journey on the I-8 differ from that other travelogue?
Well, the Schlepping Through the American West was really a 3,000-mile tour. If you, by the time you go up the 15 to Canada and then come back, you've put quite a few miles on your car. This was just 77 miles, and I was more constrained. I had to get off at every exit and find a Jewish story there. I couldn't pick and choose like I did on the longer tour.
So the shorter one was harder in a sense.
In a sense, because, yeah. I had to find my story right there. And the concept we have on our newspaper, the motto over our masthead, our online newspaper is there's a Jewish story everywhere. And the concept was, let's go out and prove it. And that's why we did it this way, is to, you know, we started at the beach, at where the I-8 begins, and we took it all the way to the Imperial County line. And that's the 77 miles of I-8. There are 35 exits in that period. And we found 70 stories, an average of two an exit, at least one at every one.
It sounds like fun.
It is fun. And I think that any ethnicity could do it. If mm-hmm. Somebody who's out there listening who's Irish or who's Mexican-American or who is Asian, Chinese, Japanese, whatever your ethnicity, I think, particularly in California, it would be easy to replicate that kind of a trip, but reach into your own historic background.
How long did it take you, the whole thing?
Well, the series ran initially on San Diego Jewish World, one a week. And so I got myself a head start on it. And then while it was, the series was running, I was a couple exits ahead on the freeway.
Right.
So altogether about 2 years.
Great. Well, you've been referred to as a highly valued wandering Jew rather than a wandering Jew. In your view, how are your stories, you talked about this a little already, but how are they particularly relevant to people from different backgrounds and faith?
Well, I think that there's a great curiosity about Jews among non-Jews. At least I've encountered it. People ask me questions all the time about mm-hmm. why we do this, why we do that. And this book provides some of the answers, especially those stories within it that deal with the institutions that are run along the I-8. For example, we cover some synagogues, a mikveh, which is the ceremonial bath, you might say, that a person takes for conversion or mm-hmm. for family purity reasons. So those customs are covered in the book. So if someone has that interest, for sure. But also because we write as well about some of their faiths in terms of the interactions they may be having with with the Jewish community. And so hopefully that's interesting to them. And then some of the stories are universal. You know, it just so happens that the person involved is Jewish, but anybody could be an alpaca farmer. You don't have to be Jewish to do that. Or anyone could be perhaps somebody like Catherine Hand, who has a facility that uses horses to help people overcome their various disabilities, riding and so forth. It's an equestrian center. And so they're very fascinating people who they're Jewish, but they're also, you might say, there's general interest about what they do.
And I'm thinking also universal themes such as survival.
Exactly, exactly. And some of the stories are sports stories, and doesn't everybody love sports?
Right.
You know, so.
So one last question.
Sure.
What are you writing next?
Well, actually, next I'm compiling stories from the past about places that I visited with Jewish stories across the country and all around the world. And I'm going to put those into one book and maybe even more, depending on just how many we got there.
And when should we expect to see the first one?
Oh, I think it's going to be sometime next year. Let's get this one out first.
Okay. Okay. Well, our time is up, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed being with you.
For more information on Donald H. Harrison's books, please visit sdjewishworld.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. With another holiday season upon us, I Love a Clean San Diego and the County of San Diego have again joined together to encourage residents to recycle their Christmas trees and minimize the amount of waste sent to the landfill. You can put your tree to better use through recycling at locations countywide. When organic materials such as Christmas trees, food, and yard clippings are sent to the landfill, they release methane, a greenhouse gas that's 25 times as potent as carbon dioxide in warming up the atmosphere. Recycling these materials prevents needless organic material from occupying space in our crowded San Diego landfills and reduces greenhouse gas generation. Recycled Christmas trees are then made into mulch, which is then used to improve soil health at public parks, local farms, and homes. Thanks to the partnership between I Love a Clean San Diego and the county, recycling your holiday tree doesn't have to be a headache. Many local waste haulers offer curbside pickup of Christmas trees and wreaths. In addition to curbside pickup, Christmas tree drop-off sites are located in East County, South County, and North County. Here in East County, those locations include El Cajon, La Mesa, Lemon Grove, and Ramona. Before recycling your Christmas tree, review these recycling tips to assure that your tree is recycled properly. Trees taller than 4 feet should be cut in half or in pieces less than 4 feet long. Remove ornaments, garland, tinsel, lights, nails, and tree stands if the stands are made of metal or plastic. Check with your local hauler to see if they accept flocked trees with fake snow. For a list of recycling sites, as well as companies that offer pickup of Christmas trees, you can visit wastefreesd.org.
This is John Fistier with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego's Health and Human Services Agency. Low-income parents can receive free child safety seats thanks to an $88,000 grant from the federal government. The county will offer child passenger safety education classes over the next 9 months and will also give away 133 child safety seats to people in need. Keeping children safe while they ride with their parents or friends is part of the county's Live Well San Diego vision, which aims to improve the health and safety of children and families in the region. The child safety workshops and free child car seats will be provided through September 2018 and are part of the Keep 'em Safe program. This is the 8th year the county has received funding from OTS. Motor vehicle injuries remain a public health challenge, especially among low-income families and underrepresented communities, and accessibility to education is critical, according to the county. For more information about the Keep 'Em Safe program, you can contact the Pacific Safety Center toll-free at 855-4-PSC-411. That number again is 855-4-PSC-411.
This is Meridian Broaddus with a health report. As smartphone use continues to increase in the U.S., especially among young children, the California Department of Public Health has issued guidance for individuals and families who want to decrease their exposure to the radio frequency emitted from cell phones. Cell phones emit radio frequency energy when they send and receive signals to and from cell towers, and some scientists and public health officials believe this energy may impact human health. Some research suggests long-term high use may impact human health, the agency warns. Some research suggests long-term high use may impact human health, the agency warns. Dr. Karen Smith, director of the state's public health department, warns, although the science is still evolving, there are concerns among some public health professionals and members of the public regarding long-term high-use exposure to the energy emitted by cell phones. She adds, we know that simple steps, such as not keeping your phone in your pocket and moving it away from your bed at night, can help reduce exposure for both children and adults. Meanwhile, cell phone use in the U.S. has increased dramatically in recent years. About 95% of Americans own a cell phone, and 12% rely on their smartphones for everyday internet access. In addition, the average age when children get their first cell phone is now just 10 years old, and a majority of young people keep their phones on or near them most of the day and while they sleep. Children's brains develop through the teenage years and may be more affected by cell phone use, said Dr. Smith. Parents should consider reducing the time their children use cell phones and encourage them to turn the devices off at night. The new state guidelines include practical steps both adults and children can take to reduce exposure to radio frequency energy from cell phones. Those steps include keeping the phone away from the body, reducing cell phone use when the signal is weak, reducing use of cell phones to stream audio or video, download or unplug large files, keeping the phone away from the bed at night, removing headsets when not on a call, and avoiding products that claim to block radio frequency energy, since these products may actually increase your exposure, according to California's Public Health Department.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
You're listening to KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ, 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Corey Clement, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.